Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gravity. We count on it every day. Sometimes it's a frenemy, but usually it keeps us on the ground and moving happily. Microgravity and zero gravity. These are all terms of art. David Livingston, Dr. Space, of The Space Show, my colleague and co-host and co-pilot. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. And we're very pleased to welcome Ben Roberts, an investor in microgravity, and he will define and help us understand what that means. And also someone who can comment on where the thinking is about the uses of microgravity, never before thought through in medical texts of the 20th century, but here we are in the 21st. Ben, a very good evening to you. Thank you. We begin, of course, if you're investing in microgravity. What is microgravity? What qualifies? Good evening to you, Ben.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a real pleasure. So I often call the microgravity applications or microgravity ventures, as it's essentially this upcoming cohort of companies that are developing applications, primarily medical or advanced materials, that take advantage of the limited effect of gravity in orbit to produce these really innovative, disruptive goods and services for use on Earth. So some of the examples of this real fast are, there's a company that's doing this very delicate layer-by-layer deposition process to put together artificial retinas that could cure blindness in tens of millions of people. There's companies that are leveraging microgravity to create new formulations of drugs that are just more effective and more stable than the ones we have on Earth. And then on the material side, and the list goes on and on, that's just a very limited subset. And on the material side, there are a number of companies coming online that are taking advantage of the lack of gravity to do incredibly advanced material stuff that you can't do on Earth, because gravity is always sort of messing with high precision mixtures and things like that. And particularly in semiconductor materials and in quantum computing and fiber optics, where you can make materials that are essentially at an order of magnitude more effective or higher quality or fewer defects than you can make on Earth, and that are worth enough money per kilogram to actually be worth doing in space.
Microgravity then is low Earth orbit, and it's not an exact term. In other words, one doesn't disqualify a gravity because it's not low enough. Anything in low Earth orbit is considered microgravity. Is that correct, Ben?
Well, in this sense, yes. It's not that gravity doesn't exist in low Earth orbit. Obviously, it does. It's just that the effect is effectively zero compared to Earth, which sort of means that a lot of living systems just act differently. Things form better with fewer defects. And on the material side, of course, you don't get things like sedimentation or convection or buoyancy when there's very little or no effect of gravity.
David, you have a question for Ben.
Ben, you keep mentioning coming online. Is this basic research, or are you seeing commercial companies doing this, and are they bringing any products to market yet?
It's a great question. So we've been doing basic research on space shuttles and ISS for decades. The commercial companies have just started really coming online in the last several years, at least ones that have a chance at success. In large part, and I want to give a lot of credit here to NASA, because doing R&D in space is very hard and very expensive. And so there's an INSPA program, in-space production, I think, applications, that has helped fund these companies that have taken them from that pre-commercial phase until now they're getting very close to commercialization. And so right now, I think the two companies I can think of that are actually sort of at their actual commercial phase are Varda and Redwire, both of which have produced essentially medical seed crystals in orbit, and then that you can sort of bring down and feed into your terrestrial supply chains. I can talk more about that if you want. But for the most part, a lot of these companies, where this industry is, if this makes sense, it's very similar to where the small sat constellation industry was about 15 years ago, where the pieces were coming together and there were companies like Planet Inspire and Hawkeye that were kind of reaching commercialization. But this is sort of right before, you know, the Dove constellation went up, which proved to everybody that you could do small sat constellations. The microgravity folks are in a similar place where you have this one application that just reached commercialization, and there's a few more that are a couple years away, primarily because they have to go through this validation process. Essentially, they've created the product, but if it's a life sciences thing, you have to get it approved or at least get enough validation clinical trials that people are willing to buy it or approve it.
You mentioned Varda. That is tricks my memory that Varda had regulatory hurdles. Do you recall those? And I believe they've been overcome. So let's focus on one company raising money now from the investors. Varda Space Industries, what is its mission and what is its relation with the regulators?
Yeah, so actually Varda is a really interesting company. It's one of the few companies in the space that's raised, I think, hundreds of millions. The rest of this industry is very undercapitalized, but Varda has tons of money. And that's partially because Varda is a weird mix where it's both creating a capsule, essentially like a capsule, I think it's based on Rocket Lab's proton or photon, that gets launched into space and then re-enters. But they're also almost like a drug company where they're trying to figure out how to make money off that themselves. And actually, their biggest source of revenue right now is doing hypersonics research for DOD. The regulatory issue is one that really won't, it was kind of a one-time thing. I guess they failed to get a reentry license, which is normally not that hard to get. I'm not blaming them. I don't know what happened, but it did cause that they had to stay in space for several months. But as you say, that did get resolved. It's not an issue for most of these companies. Because especially since right now, most of these companies, the work they're doing is being done on ISS. So they're just hitching a ride on Dragon, more or less.
We're talking about Varda as a robotic microgravity producer of product, as opposed to the human or engineered product on ISS. Is that a distinction that matters, or is that just where we are now, Ben?
So I'd say the biggest distinction is that it's an uncrewed platform. And it right now, its capacity is very, very small, especially compared to something like ISS. I think in the future, you're going to see there's a number of companies that are developing both crewed platforms that are going to be similar to Station and some that are developing uncrewed platforms where essentially you can send something up and then a bunch of robots take care of it or do whatever they need to do for a few weeks or a month and then send it back down. And it's right now it's actually pretty open which of these platforms is going to be more useful, because in principle you kind of want an uncrewed platform, but obviously because humans in the loop tends to make everything more expensive and crewed platforms are more expensive, but it could just be that the human ingenuity and having somebody there to fiddle with things is helpful. But there already are companies that are basically black boxing experiments and production facilities where it gets sent up to space and the astronauts don't touch it other than just moving it from place to place. So that's definitely a question moving forward, is whether you're going to see uncrewed supply chains or whether this will all be done on sort of the stations that are vying to be the replacement for ISS.
Boy, we're at the beginning, Ben. Yes. David, you have a question for Ben.
Yes. So if the commercial companies are not yet getting operational revenue in sale, what is the attraction for investors to fund them with long-term uncertainty?
Yeah. So the attraction is that these are potentially 9 or 10 figure type markets that a lot of these companies are going after. Like I mentioned, Lambda Vision, the company that might essentially cure blindness for tens of millions of people with macular degeneration. Escrow is another company where their nanoparticle you could actually make it on the ground if you need to, but it's more effective if you make it in space. It could cure arthritis. It's basically not only a drug delivery system, but a version of it replaces cartilage. So there is these really high, big time upside. And in terms of the revenues, what I should be clear is that most of these companies don't have commercial revenues, but the reason why they can keep operating and why they're making steady progress right now is because they can get government grants, and they have been. NASA's been really good about this. In fact, if it wasn't for NASA, this whole generation of microgravity companies, many of them might not have been able to get anywhere close to where they are, because they're getting a sort of a steady stream of either SBIR type grants or a little bit bigger INSPA grants, which tend to be a couple million dollars, that keep the lights on and keep progress moving forward in a way until they can sort of get to the commercial side. Now, there is a financial gap, and that's where I think most likely the private sector or maybe governments could step in and get these things over the valley of death to the point where you can get commercial revenues, or at least it's proven enough that the more traditional VCs and PEs will get involved. But that probably is the big, you've touched on really the biggest challenge, is that there's a number of products and services where the business model actually closes if you can sell your product, because the product is worth far more than the cost of going to orbit and back. But when you're in the R&D process, of course, you can't sell your product. So it's just really expensive R&D. And so without sort of grants from government or an investor that's willing to wait 3, 5, 7 years, it can be kind of out of luck, or things can be slow. But in the space world, I mean, there are all sorts of space applications that are, take far longer and cost way more money than what we're talking about here. We're talking single digit millions, maybe low double digit millions. These aren't launch companies or small sat constellations. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. We've spoken mostly in terms of pharmaceuticals, but according to Dr. Livingston's reporting, there are other applications for lower microgravity. Advanced nanoparticles, what is that? 3D printed cardiac tissue. Okay, a paper heart. And accelerated aging studies. Can you speak to each of those, Ben?
Sure. These are, one of them actually I mentioned already, the nanoparticle. There's a number of companies doing things like this, but the one I often think go to is ESRA, because it's pretty easy to explain. They're creating this nanoparticle that acts as it's a much more advanced drug delivery system than what we currently use for chemotherapies and vaccines and so forth, and that it wraps around the treatment and is tagged to deliver it exactly to the organ it's supposed to go to. So it's more stable. You can give higher dosages and it has less toxicity. And it can be made on the ground, but it's about 40 or 50% more effective if you make it in space, because the absence of gravity helps it form better. If I had pictures, you could kind of see that the space one is just more firm. It's more better structure. And because it's a nanoparticle, it actually makes sense to make it in space, even if it's $100,000 a kilogram. The accelerated aging thing.
I'm especially interested in that when we come back.
Sure.
Accelerated aging. I like the whole idea. Get to be 100 and then keep going. Ben Roberts is an investor in microgravity exploration. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. We're talking about making money in low Earth orbit. Why not? It's commercialized right now in all directions, chiefly to do with communications. But this is the other rest of the story. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.